We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
We're back. It's the Carolina Insider. Jones, Adam. Adam, it's been a long time. How are you, sir?
I thought you were about to sing O Canada.
It kind of felt like it. I wasn't trying to, but then I thought maybe I should.
I couldn't figure out where we were going with that, but it had been a while, so I thought maybe I'd forgotten that we usually did the national anthems of both countries before we began.
So, on Easter, one of the things that the Easter Bunny brought my kids, thankfully, were kazoos.
Ooh.
And so, the very first thing, have I told you this?
No.
The very first thing that my son, who's 5 years old, picks up the kazoo and begins to play the national anthem. for no reason at all. No prompting. It was just like, burr, 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 burr. So I stood up and put my hand over my heart as this was occurring.
Well, I think because that's the first thing you do when you're getting started.
That's right. Beginning of the day.
Yeah.
Time to go check out the egg hunt. Better get the anthems fired up.
I bet Mrs. Bunny purchased the kazoos.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She wasn't thinking. Not thinking clearly on that one. Come on, Easter Bunny. But the moment of the national anthem was high quality.
And solemn, as it should have been.
That's right. A reflective time as well.
While wearing bunny ears.
What's going on? It's been a long time since we've potted.
The Tar Heels are still the national champions.
Yes, that hasn't changed. That's good to know.
Does it feel like to you that the Tar Heels are the national champions yet?
No, and I said that to somebody. I feel like it is probably going to be, I bet it's going to be like the beginning of next season until it really hits you. I think when the banner goes up in the Smith Center, to me, will be, I think, an important moment in that regard. But, I mean, think about this. I mean, the years that they occur are ingrained in everyone's mind forever. And I don't know. I don't think it's hit me yet in that way. That 2017 will forever be like 1982. And it's just in that same conversation.
I realized that I guess maybe I'm not mean enough, which I know would surprise some people.
Whoa, better take a survey on that
one. Some people just drove off the road. Because like I've had a couple people email me or tweet at me and they're like mad about something related to Carolina basketball, like recruiting or this guy's going pro or whatever. And I'm just kind of like, I don't care. National champions.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. I think the next year is all, it's all gravy. You get a year buffer after the championship.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah.
Well, And like here at Carolina, you get a year. At other places, you would get a lifetime.
Yeah, you get like 20 years.
Yeah, but here you'll get like until October.
Right.
Or until Coach Williams doesn't call a timeout against Tennessee.
And then all of a sudden, he's forgotten how to do everything again.
I told you we would have beat Kentucky by 8 if he had called timeout to set up that play.
So we've got a lot to do. Adam and I have both been doing things recently that might be of interest to people, or maybe not. And we just have – so we're going to talk about the – Adam's been in all these interviews with coaches and players that is leading up to the championship book that will be written and published here soon. And we'll let Adam give us an update on that in a second. I have been out on the Tar Heel Tour with the Rams Club, so out with some Carolina coaches and different Tar Heel folks and meeting different Carolina people doing these kind of caravan-like tours. Still have a couple left, but kind of on the back end of that now. So we've been able to gather some information and jolly good times all at once. So, Adam, I thought we'd start with the book. First, just if people don't know about it, kind of what is it? How can they get it? And then once we're done with that, I want to know some of the cool stories that you've heard from the guys as you've been in these interviews.
Yeah, the book is called Redemption. It's about the 2017 national champion.
Sure, yeah.
And you can get it, like I think you can order it on Amazon, but if you go to the UNC Press website, which I think I have linked from my Twitter account and probably Instagram too, and use the promo code 01CHAMPS.
Oh.
You get a...
It's 01CHAMPS?
Hey, I didn't make the promo code.
Why wouldn't the promo code be 17CHAMPS?
Again, I didn't make the promo code.
Who did make the promo code?
I choose not to reveal that.
You know who won the championship in 01?
Yes.
Duke.
Yeah, I mean, I knew. You didn't have to tell me.
Well, just in case somebody else didn't know. It was Duke.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you make the promo code 17CHAMPS?
You can make your own promo code, but you won't get $5 off and free shipping. I can promise you that.
Well, okay.
So click on the link that'll take you to the UNC Press website, and then use the hated promo code of 01CHAMPS. CHAMPS is all capital.
01CHAMPS!
So what's going to be cool about this book is, as we know, John Lyon is really many things, but one of them is photographer extraordinaire.
Sure.
And at some point, we need to have him on the pod. Summer would be a good time.
Oh, yeah. We've got a long list of people that we need to have on the pod.
We really do. And so he travels with the team when he's not traveling with Eric Church, because that's the life that John Lyon leads.
Yeah.
And so he's got, there's no exaggeration, tens of thousands of behind-the-scenes pictures from this year. And some words about those pictures and about some things that you don't know about that happened this year. So it's not just going to be so much like, then the Tar Heels went and played Butler. It's going to be some things that happened behind the scenes and what the players and coaches thought was important. And so in the course of that, we've sat down with those players and coaches. A scant 3-hour and 45-minute interview with Coach Williams at his house one night.
Wow.
Started at 7:30, walked out the door at 11:45. I realize that's more than 3 hours and 45 minutes, but that's because when we were finished with the interview, Mrs. Williams was not home.
Mm.
So he was bored. It's not that he likes us. And he said, hey, do you guys want to go upstairs and look at my pictures? And when Roy Williams asks you that, like you say, yes,
sure,
we
right,
would like
yeah.
to do that. And so he took us upstairs where I had not been before, and he had like a whole wall of family pictures. So he had like a picture of the house where he grew up that you always hear him talking about. And he had the one picture he has of his family all together.
Mm.
He had many pictures, as you would expect, of his mom. He had pictures of his kids. He had pictures of he and Wanda, Mrs. Williams, when they were assistant, when he was an assistant coach. She was not an assistant coach at Carolina. And he went through them one by one. It was like, well, this is what this is. It was unbelievable. And so then he had this one picture of he was maybe like 5 or 6, and he was holding up a fish.
Mm-hmm.
He had gone fishing with his uncle. And so we finished looking at all the pictures. We went back downstairs, and he goes, hey, you guys got another couple minutes? And again, like it's midnight, but you say,
sure,
yes,
yeah.
we do. And so he takes us in his office and he goes, "You remember that fish?" I'm like, "Yes." And he holds up this like mounted fish. He's like, "This the fish." He still got the fish that was in the picture. His uncle had saved it for him. And when his uncle passed away, his aunt gave it to him and said he had always wanted him to have it. So the most interesting thing by far that we talked about with Coach was kind of his family dynamic, which I have not heard him talk about before.
So not even really about the season necessarily.
No. Well, because the players all talked about that too. But Mrs. Williams had been very, very nice to give us a ton of background that I had not heard before about kind of the way they interact and what he's like away from the Smith Center. And he kind of is exactly what you think he is. Like she said, he doesn't watch TV. He doesn't read. He doesn't know anything about anything that goes on at their house. And he verified that. He was like, "Well, when we were looking at a beach house, I told the guy, and he thought I was kidding, 'Do you have any trouble dealing with women?' And he thought I was joking. But I was serious. I said, 'Because I'm not going to have a freaking thing to do with this beach house. So you're going to have to talk to Wanda.'" I can totally see him saying that. So that was really interesting. I don't know how much of it will make it in the book, but hopefully if the writer's worth a darn, a good portion of it will.
Questionable.
Yeah. So that was fun. And then we've interviewed the five starters, Nate Britt, Kenny Williams, Luke May. Also for the book, we just this week we've done Theo Pinson. That was the most emotional interview. He got very teary. I think people don't realize how dicey things were when he got hurt the second time.
Mm-hmm.
That's if I could pick a theme that every single player has talked about, that would be one of them. Because, and remember, we talked about it when it happened, because then Carolina went down and laid a fat egg at Miami.
Yep.
And everybody was like, "Oh, I guess Carolina's not good." And we said, "I don't know. I think there might have been some other things going on."
Right. It was kind of their in mourning game.
And Joel Berry was all mad.
Yeah.
And they all talked about, like, that's what the problem was. And Theo just told an unbelievably emotional story about when he found out he was hurt, and Sean May and Eric Hoots went over to his apartment and he called his dad on his phone. His dad was already down in Miami getting ready for the game to watch him play. And Theo had to tell his dad, like, "I'm hurt. I'm not going to play. I've let you down." And his dad was like, "Oh, Theo, you could never let me down. You make me proud every single day."
Man, this book sounds intense.
Yeah, it is. How about
come for the championships, stay for the emotional stories?
Yeah. I didn't know. Did you know this? Do you know about Rusty Carter's dad?
Well, I assumed Rusty Carter had a dad, but other than that, no.
Rusty Carter's dad is awesome.
Hmm.
So Rusty Carter is a close friend of Coach Williams.
Yes.
And a longtime Tar Heel supporter, graduate of Carolina. If you saw him, you would probably recognize
him.
Yeah,
you'd go, "Oh, it's that guy."
Yeah. So Carolina, just don't tell anybody, went to Memphis to play a preseason scrimmage.
Right.
And while they were there, they went to the Civil Rights Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Because Coach Williams, every time his team goes to Memphis, he takes them there. That's another theme. Coach Williams as a teacher, Jones. You're going to read more about that.
Oh, man.
Promo code 01 champs.
$5 off. Yep. Free shipping.
So he had the team go to the Civil Rights Museum. So later that day, they're at practice. And Coach Williams says, "Hey, Rusty," who was on the trip, "would you mind talking to the team in the locker room?" Well, as you know, Coach Williams doesn't ask anyone to talk to the team in the locker room. It turns out that Rusty Carter's dad won a Pulitzer Prize for his work fighting the Klan in Mount Tabor, North Carolina.
Wow. And I had no idea.
PBS has produced a documentary about him. And I can't remember Rusty Carter's dad's name. But Google Mount Tabor newspaper Ku Klux Klan. I realize that's a weird thing to Google. And maybe like throw Pulitzer Prize.
Maybe do it at you on your home.
Yeah. But there's like a whole website devoted to all the things his dad did and wrote all these editorials, which, as you can imagine, got quite a bit of brushback.
Sure.
And so Rusty Carter went in and talked to the team about like what his dad had done and how that related to what they had just seen and how happy his dad would be that they were all there. And Rusty Carter talked about how like Carolina had been a life-changing place for him, and he knew it was going to be for all of these guys, and he hoped they would take the advantage of the opportunity.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was. And I had never heard that story. Coach Williams is the one who actually mentioned it in his interview. We were talking about all the things the team did away from the court this year. He said, I mean, you know about Rusty's dad. And I was like, mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, you're playing along.
You know Mr. Carter. You know what he's like. And he's like, well, I had Rusty talk to the team when we were in Memphis. And really, I just asked Rusty about it because it's so unusual for Coach Williams to have someone else talk to his team.
Yes.
Like, the list of people I can think of who have done that is, like, Michael Jordan after the 16 championship.
Wait. After the what championship?
The 16 championship game. When Michael Jordan won.
Oh, 16. Okay. All right.
2016.
Okay. I was confused because I thought you were talking about 2005 when he also went into the locker room. But I don't think he spoke to them.
Right.
All right. Keep going.
Maybe, like, J. Cole. And Rusty Carter.
Three gentlemen who you would all put in the same sentence.
So I've learned a lot about this year that I didn't know. But really, the coolest thing are going to be the pictures, because the pictures are awesome. And you'll see a side of the team. Like, you'll see them having all the fun that you've heard them talk about.
Right.
And it's cool to get to see that kind of – because for so long, Carolina basketball was kind of this closed thing, and as a fan, you didn't really get to see behind the curtain. This book, hopefully, is going to be behind the curtain.
It just,
yeah.
I feel like. I feel like I have to listen to the song anytime the Tar Heels are in Memphis.
Yeah.
Do you know who sang this song?
Mark Cohn.
Whoa. You're all over it.
Well, you know why I know that is. Well, I mean, one, because I'm a connoisseur of great music. And two.
All right.
I've been in the jungle room now, by the way. I went to Graceland when we were there.
I've walked in Memphis before.
But you know that country group Lone Star?
Yes.
They recorded that song too.
Yes.
And it's so disappointing when it comes on and you hear those first few notes and you think, oh, this is going to be awesome. And you're like, oh.
Wait.
It's still a good song, but it's nowhere close to that.
How come country guys can redo songs like while, and this isn't the case with Walking in Memphis, but like while they're still out from like somebody else?
Yeah.
I feel like this happens a lot. Remember that Aerosmith song, Don't Want to Miss a Thing? And then some country group, probably Lone Star or one of those, did it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? No, this is out from them. How can you now be doing it?
Steven Tyler already did this, boys. Steven Tyler, who was the musical entertainment at the Final Four. We didn't go. But Ben Alexander went and probably stayed upright the whole time.
All tied into a nice little bow. Anything from the player interview? I know you mentioned Theo Pinson. Anything else from the player interviews that really stood out to you as you've been working on this book?
Oh, this is kind of a funny story. So you remember at the banquet when Kennedy Meeks talked about the fight he got into with Nate Britt?
Yes.
And Nate Britt was like, is that out? And Kennedy was like, it is now.
Yeah.
Well, so there were four people there. Kennedy, Nate, Isaiah Hicks, who was Kennedy's roommate all 4 years, and JP Tokido.
Mm.
And the first three, we asked all three about it. Every single one of them said the same thing. The very first thing they said, you know it was JP's fault, right? Apparently, JP was like antagonizing Nate.
Mm.
And Nate somehow took it out on Kennedy. But you got to remember, this is freshman Kennedy.
Yeah.
That's a different weight class.
Oh, yeah.
And so everybody was saying, like, it kind of told you something about Nate.
That he was going to, yeah.
That he was willing to even take this on when Kennedy could have ended him.
Yeah.
So, but then, of course, Kennedy and Nate ended up being almost like brothers
mm-hmm.
and have this unbelievably great relationship. And they both kind of said, like, that day kind of taught us something about the other one, that we would want that one on our side. But I think in general, I think if you're going to fight somebody on the team, Nate Britt's probably not who you want to fight. I think Joel Berry is a no, and Nate Britt is a you probably don't want any of that.
I enjoy the fact that it was JP Tokido who was egging them on, because you can totally believe that.
And that Isaiah, Kennedy, Nate, all three said the first thing out of their mouth, oh, you know it was JP. And they said funny. That this is like freshman Isaiah Hicks, who's fresh out of Oxford.
Right.
The way – I think it was the way Nate told it is like Isaiah was in the other room playing his video game. Again, not surprising. And so Kennedy and Nate decide they're going to fight. But this is what kind of fight it was. It was like a, all right, fellows, let's move all the furniture out of the middle of the room.
It was more like a duel.
It really was. So apparently they like pushed all the furniture to the walls so they would have grappling room. And so Nate said, so we're going at it, and I've got Kennedy in a headlock. And Isaiah walks in the room and like puts his hands on his head and is like, you guys, what are you guys doing? And like runs out of the room because he couldn't take it.
This kind of sounds like it should be a sitcom.
It's yet. But like Isaiah would be from another country. Like, what are you guys doing? We no fight. We are friends.
It's like perfect strangers.
I am Isaiah Bartakabus.
I wish I could have seen this.
The way Nate told it made Isaiah sound like a 6-year-old. Like he came in and like all the furniture's pushed up against the walls. He's like, you guys, what are you guys doing? Meanwhile, Kennedy's like sitting on Nate Britt, who at that point is a starter. And then Isaiah runs out of the room, and I picture it as like a cartoon. Woo. Like he's like, pew! And all you see is like the dust where he was.
Meanwhile, Tokido's probably forgotten that he instigated this and is texting somebody on his phone.
Tokido's like, did you guys know I can do a 360? Because I can.
Man, whew. Think about all these hilarious stories that are coming.
That story will not be as funny in the book as it is on the pod, because you won't get the sense of Isaiah with his hands on his head. You guys! And then we asked Isaiah about it. We're like, Isaiah, Nate said that you were a little traumatized, and he tried to tell you. He was like, well, I mean, I was surprised.
I wish he'd have been like, actually, I went in there and tried to break the two of them up and threw them both against the wall. Oh, man. Promo code 01CHAMPS.
Joel Berry and Theo both talked about coming back for their senior year.
Uh-huh.
And Joel Berry, we put some of the quotes on Go Heels. Joel Berry, like, stepped up to the plate, received the question, what's important to you about being a senior at Carolina? And boom, hit it over like three fences.
Yeah, I think Joel Berry is well into going to be all-time favorite, fan favorite Tar Heel. I mean, not just because of the accomplishments that he's had on the court, but just the way I think that he's grown and matured and the way that he's led. I mean, just all these different things. I think people are really, they love them some Joel Berry.
We asked Joel Berry, like, what do you have to come back for? Not in a bad way,
sure.
But like anything you would set as a goal, you've done.
Right.
And he said, well, people have always told me I'm not good enough. And so anytime I start thinking I've accomplished something, I think about all those people, and that pushes me to go do whatever I'm going to do next. And he said, and I just want to be a senior at North Carolina. Now, Theo was much more open about, like, I want to win another national championship. And Joel Berry was more like, I just want the whole thing. He said, I want to slow down the whole thing and enjoy every single day. And I mean, I do think, like, we're getting close to Tyler Hansbrough territory in terms of fan love.
Yeah.
For Joel Berry.
I mean, he's accomplished a lot. I mean, ACC tournament MVP, Final Four most outstanding player, a national title as a player, two Final Fours. I mean, done a ton.
That senior day with Joel Berry and Theo Pinson,
it's going to be good.
We don't know who it'll be against right now, but that one's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, it will be good. So again, the book is called Redemption. Do you have an idea when it'll be out, or when the goal is for it to be out?
Late September, early October.
So
just in time for your late night experiences.
Just to be ready to go. And what's the website again?
Yeah, the best way to get it is through the UNC Press website, and I think the direct link is on my like Twitter profile and on my Instagram profile.
Promo code 01CHAMPS.
Yes.
Not 17 champs.
No.
01 champs. All right. So I've been out on the Tar Heel tour, What?
I picture you with like roadies. All right, guys, get it packed up. We're off.
Here we go.
You got a big 18-wheeler with your picture on the side.
So far, I've been to Atlanta, Winston-Salem, Charlotte, Rocky Mount, and Raleigh. And there have been stops that I didn't go to because they were conflicting with other stops in Roanoke. No, excuse me, in Richmond and in Washington, D.C. And there's still upcoming stops in Lumberton, Greensboro, Charleston, and Wilmington. So we're like in the back third of it. And so if you don't know what these are, they're for Rams Club members. But, you know, not exclusively. You know, you can be invited certainly to come. And coaches are there, and there's dinner or lunch depending on what time of day it is, or hors d'oeuvres and drinks. Again, just kind of depending on the facility and what the goal is. And then we have about an hour to an hour, 15-minute program. The Atlanta one had both Coach Fedora and Coach Williams, and that was the only one that's going to have them both because it was the only one that worked in their schedule for them both to be available. I'm going to tell you something. The Atlanta crowd was red hot. They were fired up. And so, you know, all I do is I kind of emcee it and just kind of move the pieces and ask some questions before we open it up for people who are there to ask questions. But kind of at the very start, if there's a former athlete there, a lot of times we'll have them come up first. So in Raleigh, for example, Matt Merletti got up and spoke. Eric Montross spoke in Charlotte. And in Atlanta, Algie Crumpler spoke. And I'm going to tell you something about Algie Crumpler. He's awesome. I know Algie a little bit, but I was super impressed by him at this event. Like, he just came up and he was awesome. And one of the funniest moments of the whole thing. Now, I'm going to give you a warning. This is going to be PG-13, what's about to happen.
Okay.
But so Coach Fedora was talking about the importance of the indoor facility. That is being built as part of these huge facility upgrades. Bubba Cunningham talked about this with us on the last pod. And so Coach Fedora is talking about all the different uses that they're going to be able to get. And, you know, he's really just kind of selling the importance of this thing, which, by the way, Carolina is the only school in the ACC now that does not have a practice facility, at least under construction. Miami's the only other one that doesn't have one, and they've started construction on theirs. So when this construction begins, it will be much needed for the Tar Heels. But anyway, so Coach Fedora kind of goes, Algie, you know what I'm talking about. This thing's going to be really important, right, as a former player? And so Algie Crumpler stands up, and he goes, "That's right, Coach. That's why I wrote you that fat-ass check." It was awesome. It was awesome. So I told this story, and this is absolutely a true story. I'm not going to tell the whole thing here, but it was my softball team when I was in college, like intramural team. Played Algie Crumpler's intramural team.
How'd that go?
And there was this moment where, like, and I was the catcher, which, of course, because, like, I was the worst player on the team. Because I was playing with a bunch of guys that had been, like, former baseball players. So right. We were good. There was a relay at home, and Algie was rounding third and coming home. And so, anyway, it's a funny story. But Algie Crumpler was.
Did he score? Did you tag him out? What happened? What, you just going to not tell us what happened?
Okay. So we, our softball team, like, we took pride in throwing people out of the plate. Like, I mean, we did this a lot. I don't mind saying that. Like, we did it a lot. We were good. And, again, I was, if not by far the worst player, close to the worst player. Because we had a bunch of dudes who, like, played, like, state champion high school baseball players. Like, really good players. We would do this, like, I mean, I can't tell you how many times we would relay at home and get people out at home. Like, I'm having this moment where, like, there's balls. I think Algie must have been on second, and the ball's hit out to the outfield, so he's, like, coming home. And so, like, I'm diagnosing the situation, right? Like, I'm standing there ready to receive the relay, but Algie Crumpler's running down the third baseline. And this is, like, I mean, I wouldn't get in Algie Crumpler's way now,
right?
But this was, like, 20-year-old in the prime of his life Algie Crumpler coming at me, right? And so it's like, okay, the left fielder, like the left fielder hits the cutoff man, the shortstop. And I'm like, all right, what's going to happen? And so then our shortstop like turns to throw it. I'm like, okay, how far away is Algie Crumpler? He's coming really at a fast speed. And so as I explained to the crowd in Atlanta, it was like train A leaves leaves at this time. Train B leaves at this time. Like which one gets there first? And so I just make the decision, like, with Algie Crumpler about, like, 7 feet away just to get out of the way. Like, I didn't even attempt to make a catch on the ball. I just totally got out of the way. But that's allowed me to be here with you today.
That was probably the right call.
Yeah, it was the right move. But so, Algie Crumpler was awesome. The crowd in Atlanta was awesome.
The Atlanta Carolina Club and the Boston Carolina Club are the two, like, big city Carolina fan bases that I think of as being awesome.
I think there are a lot of Carolina fans in Atlanta. And we've seen that when we go with the Tar Heels, I mean, this year, the Georgia Tech game. Mm-hmm. But there is just a ton of positive energy and a lot of Carolina fans there, a lot of young Carolina fans. I think Atlanta and Boston and D.C., I think, is that way too. Like a lot of people who are 5 or 6 years out of school or whatever and have moved on to their professional career, starting a family, whatever. There are a lot of Carolina fans in these areas. So anyway, it was a great, great group. So afterwards, we're getting a ride to the airport because we're going to fly back. And there are several people in the car, but two of them are Roy Williams and Larry Fedora, and I'm in the car. And so
you're riding shotgun.
Right, yeah, of course. So it started off well when we get in the car and Coach Williams asked the driver, he's like, about how long do you think it's going to be? And the driver goes, about 75 minutes. And Coach Williams goes, what? And he's like, oh, no, I'm just messing with you. It's going to be 15 minutes. And so, like, we had already established a very jovial relationship. So this driver, I don't know if it was like a car service or just like an Uber. I really don't know because I didn't do anything but get in the car. Yeah, I'm just like a baby. I just follow around. Tell me where to go, what to do. So several things occurred that were funny. One, he started talking about play calling, like football play calling. Because somehow
He the driver.
So, I think Coach Williams was asking Coach Fedora something about like the Falcons or something in the Super Bowl. And so then the driver got all fired up about it because he was a Falcons fan because we were in Atlanta. And he starts just crushing play calling while like Fedora's sitting right there. And he's like, I just don't understand what these coaches are thinking when they're doing all that. And he's like, the only thing Coach Fedora, he's like, yeah, maybe harder than you think it is or something along those lines. It was just really funny. We also had one gentleman who went into this long explanation about a play that he wanted Larry Fedora to run. And Coach Fedora goes, I tell you what, draw it up on the napkin, hand it to me. I'll take it back to the staff room and we'll all go over it. But then the same driver, so then somehow I can't quite remember how it all got to this. We were talking about the NCAA tournament. And I'm still not sure if this guy understood that Roy Williams and Larry Fedora were in the car or not. I just don't know. Because he was like, man, I'm so glad the Tar Heels won. He was like, I'm so glad North Carolina won. That won me $100 in my pool that North Carolina won. And Coach Williams, and he was like, what about you? Or something like that. And Coach Williams was like, yeah, I'm really glad they won too. It was just totally random. I still don't know if the guy knew it or not.
Because sometimes they have members drive y'all around.
It was not, yeah. It sounds like that was not the case in this one.
Well, and the other thing people have to know is, like, Coach Williams isn't good when he's not driving. Like, he wants to drive.
Yes, he doesn't like not driving.
Because he thinks he can get there faster than anyone else. either via a better route or faster driving.
And he hates GPSs. Like, he doesn't like the GPS navigational tools.
He prints out the MapQuest directly. Like you did in 1999 or something,
yeah.
Where it says, like, go 0.7 miles and take a left on this on your sheet of paper. He takes that with him.
Do you think the MapQuest folks were like, man, we have got the jackpot here? But in the MapQuest meeting, didn't somebody go, guys, what if we could do something so it would actually tell him this?
No, people will want to print it out for forever. It's much easier to look at the sheet of paper. Shut up, Edward. Go back to your cube.
So then, I can't even remember what day it was. I don't even remember.
When you're out on tour, they all
all come together. But so I'm riding with Ken Mack, former Tar Heel player and coach, and now major gift representative or whatever they're called for the Rams Club, and just like one of the coolest dudes ever. Ken's driving, me and Larry Fedora. So really, Larry Fedora and me, I guess, better way to say that. So Coach Fedora is in the back seat, and I was like, Coach, I was sitting there. He was like, no, I got some work to do. I got to spread out a bunch of stuff. And I was like, okay. So he's in the back seat, and then all of a sudden, the radio or whatever gets all funky. It like cuts off and blah, blah. And Coach Fedora had plugged in his phone. I guess there's some kind of jack in the back, and he had plugged in his phone to charge his phone, but it had taken over the radio in the car. His phone had. And so his playlist starts playing. So I wrote down right here the songs that played in the Larry Fedora playlist. I think we were going from Winston-Salem to Charlotte. Ain't No Mountain High Enough. Then Free Falling by Tom Petty.
That's a good song.
Coming up next, Sexual Healing by Marvin Gaye. Then Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival. And finally, I Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Wow.
Yeah. So very eclectic mix, but kind of hanging on the kind of funk, kind of classic rock vibe there.
Do we think that was just his everyday playlist?
I don't know. It's all I heard. So for the last whatever time period that was of the drive, we got some Larry Fedora mix magic.
You should make him sit in the back all the time.
Yeah. Could you plug your phone back in, Coach? The Charlotte, when we stopped in Charlotte, I'm going to tell you something. This was really cool. So Roy Williams was not in Charlotte. It was the same day that they went to the General Assembly with his team, so he couldn't do the stuff that day. So for the basketball portion of the event, we had this little roundtable discussion. It was Sean May, Eric Montross, Marvin Williams, and Antoine Jameson. It was really, really cool. All four of those guys were awesome, as you would expect. Marvin talked about the impact Coach Williams had on his life, was really good. He talked about, you know, coming back for 10 years. I mean, I think you forget it was 10 years he continued to come back before he got his degree. Still the only one-and-done player that's graduated from college. Antoine Jameson talked about his relationship with Coach Smith. He talked about how the disappointment of not winning a championship in 98. He talked about Coach Guthridge, you know, openly crying with him and telling him that it was his fault, he felt like, that they didn't win in 98. Just all talked about the Carolina family. I mean, just all of it. And I do think, I mean, where else are you going to go where you got four guys who have accomplished what those four guys have? You're three of those have won national championships. Three of them are in the rafters. Marvin Williams would be if he hadn't gone after 1 year. You know, all of them played successfully, professionally. They've all, even the three of them who are no longer playing, have all gone on to successful post-playing career. I mean, just where else are you going to get those four guys allow an hour and a half of their time as far as getting there and doing this event solely because they love Carolina and love Carolina basketball? That can't happen many places.
That's a good reason to join the Rams Club.
Yes. I mean, it's there's just all kinds of neat stuff like that. And I think what people don't get, and this I will give you a little sales pitch for the Rams Club real fast. A couple different things. One, they are in a big membership drive. They're trying to go from 14,000 to 22,000 members. That's an enormous jump. But the main reason why is even if you're, it's, I mean, you can join for $100 a year. And you can do that. You can pay that over 12 months. You can do, I mean, you can do $8 a month or whatever that
is. It's like your Netflix.
Right. But that money goes to fund scholarships. And that's, I mean, I think that is, and that's not all they do, of course. But I do think that's the one that needs to be understood the most, is that scholarship prices, for lack of a better term, are not going to go down. And I think the number is 80 or 85% of Carolina's scholarship athletes are from out of state. So even, you know, again, that's going to be a larger amount that having to be paid. Those annual dues go to fund those scholarships. And so to hear those former athletes talk about how impactful their time at Carolina was on their lives then and now, and how it's all because of the scholarship that they received, and that scholarship is because of people funding the helping to fund with through the Rams Club. I mean, it was really, really impactful.
I think there's some people have the misconception about the Rams Club, like you have to be an alumni, you have to give $10,000, you have to do this or that. You can be anyone.
Anybody.
Who just wants to be a part of Carolina Athletics. Like, for example, if you're local, I think they still do the open practice for Rams Club members. You can come to a basketball practice. You don't join just to buy tickets. I might add, you get a fine-looking publication called Born and Bred that has features you're not going to read anywhere else because we don't put them online because it's just for the members. So it really is – it really does. It makes a difference, and I think it's more satisfying when you see Theo Pinson in tears on the court in Phoenix after he's won a championship and know, like, you played a part in putting him there.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
It is a big deal. So I really would encourage you to join, and I don't have any dog in the fight other than, I mean, I'm not employed by the Rams Club. It is worth it. I think it is, and if you love Carolina, and you're like, how, you know, what are ways that you can help Carolina? If you, that's the number one way I think you can help Carolina.
Really, 14,000 to 22,000 is a huge jump, but you think about, like, the Smith Center seats roughly 22,000, so that surprises me that you fill up the Smith Center 15 times a year, but there's not even that many Rams Club members.
I do think there is a misconception, and I don't know how to, that you have to be really, really wealthy to be a member,
or that it's
only this elite,
right,
elite group, and that's not the case. I mean, obviously there are tiered levels of giving, and some people are able to give a lot more. $100, that's it. $100 a year. So anyway. Hope people can at least think about that.
Those roundtable type interviews where you have more than one person, why are those always so good? I think it helps that you've got peers talking to peers. Like, it's not somebody just like me asking Eric Montross questions.
Right.
It's Eric Montross and Marvin Williams who have a common thing that they went through. And, like, they can talk on a higher level. Those are always good.
I think, and the amazing part, I mean, Eric played 15 years or so before Marvin Williams did. And they still, I mean, they have a connection simply because of the fact that they played at Carolina. And we've talked about that before, and it's, I mean, it has been discussed many times, but it's real. That's not made up. It's real.
I talked to Marcus Page for the book, and he said, we had him on the podcast, and he talked a little bit about this, but he said even after he did that interview with us, I guess the Jazz went to Portland for a preseason game, and he said he was kind of standing there at halftime, and Ed Davis walked up to him, and he said he had never met Ed Davis. Didn't even know Ed Davis knew who he was. And they talked for 10 minutes just about Carolina and how they had been doing, and Ed was asking, how's your adjustment to pro basketball going? He said, like, you don't realize it until you get out there, and it's a real thing. And sneakily, the best part was, one of the Jazz assistants is Tony Lang, who used to play for Duke and played under Mike Krzyzewski. And Marcus said that Tony Lang came up to him and said, "What is it with you Carolina guys? Everywhere we go that there's a Carolina guy, you guys are running up to each other and hugging each other. No other school does that. It's only Carolina guys." He said, I would like to have that. He said, "That's really cool what you guys have." So when you're getting it from Tony Lang, like, that's a real thing.
Sure. Couple nuggets from the coaches on these events. Larry Fedora asked a lot about the offense, which, I mean, I think is understandable. Carolina's losing pretty much everybody offensively. The Tar Heels have a graduate transfer coming in at quarterback, but he's still a recruitable athlete, so Larry Fedora has been unable to talk about him. Maybe I should put it this way. They anticipate a graduate transfer coming in, but that is not finalized yet, although it is anticipated. I think that's going to be a real battle at the quarterback position. I mean, that is wide open right now. I would expect that if they do get the graduate transfer, he is going to have a little bit of an upper hand just because he has played in big games before. Larry Fedora is very quick to talk about how talented he thinks his group of quarterbacks are, but they're all young. I mean, Chad Surratt and Logan Bird are redshirt freshmen, and Nathan Elliott is a redshirt sophomore who took, 15 snaps or something last year of live action, and I'm guessing on that number. So, but that will be a heated competition. And, I mean, everything offensively is wide open right now. I don't think there is one position other than maybe tight end where Carolina has some experience with Fritz and Tucker and others coming back. I don't think there's one position that is set in stone as of yet. So there is a lot to still be figured out on that end. Roy Williams and Sean May, who was the representative for basketball on a bunch of these trips, asked a bunch about Tony Bradley and what they thought Tony might do. And at least I heard Sean talk about this multiple times. He said that Tony's performance at the NBA Combine is going to be the deciding factor in Sean's opinion. Now, certainly that is not Tony saying that or Tony's dad saying that or anybody who is going to be somebody who makes this decision. But it seems like those couple of days are going to be really important for what Tony Bradley decides he wants to do.
That's this week in Chicago.
Correct. Yeah, coming up.
Starting this weekend.
Yeah.
And I think Coach Williams is planning to go. Because, I mean, obviously, not just Tony Bradley's there, but Justin Jackson's there. Kennedy Meeks is there.
Yep.
Isaiah Hicks is there. So that'll be big for all their futures.
I want to tell you a quick story about Justin Jackson. So I was, this time of year, I host a bunch of events. It's just part of what you do. And so one of these events that I was hosting was for this nonprofit called Gigi's Playhouse, with which works with children and adults who have Down syndrome. And so the woman who is the president and founder of the Raleigh branch of this nonprofit is a neighbor of Steve Robinson. And so she asked Coach Rob, we're having this event. Is there somebody, we have a signed basketball. That was one of the things in their auction, a 2017 signed ball. Is there anybody from Carolina that might, I mean, she's just total shot in the dark, that might be willing to just show up and say hello, that could aid in maybe getting a higher price for this ball? Well, Justin Jackson came. So you're looking at a guy, ACC player. I mean, this is several weeks after the season is over, ACC Player of the Year, national champion, jersey going in the rafters. He doesn't even have to be here anymore. He's here finishing out the semester academically while he's working on his game, and he takes the time on a Sunday night to come to this event. He didn't even say anything. He just, I made this big introduction, and he comes out, and he's just kind of waving and saying hello. And the ball ends up going, and they ended up, the winner was also going to get, Justin was going to, deliver the ball and sign a shirt and a hat for this person. It went for $2,500 that went to this charity, and I'm sure it would have gone for a good amount of money, but just his presence being there made a difference. I mean, I just thought that was really cool that somebody, he had no obligation in any way to do that. And he went and took his time and did that, and I thought that was really neat. I think, and I might be wrong about this, I think Justin, who's now engaged, I think his fiance is actually on the board for this particular nonprofit as like a junior board member or something down in Gainesville, Florida. I think that's right. So he had a little connection. It was something that was important to him, and he did. I saw that was really neat.
Justin Jackson actually is about 40.
In his maturity level, yes.
Yes. I mean, he, through kind of a weird quirk, my wife and I ended up at the Charlotte airport with he and Luke May, with flights being canceled.
Mm.
And just, and both those guys, Justin Jackson and Luke May, are both about 40. And just talking to them and kind of in a removed from basketball setting where it's just their real life setting.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, Luke had gone to Florida to see his brother play because his brother plays baseball for Florida.
Yep.
Justin had come from Iowa where he had gone to watch his brother play in some AAU basketball tournament. And they had kind of just randomly ended up back in Charlotte. But, like, that's what they did with their, I think, maybe, like, second weekend after winning the championship. Luke May went to watch his brother play baseball. Justin went to watch his brother play basketball. You understand why those two are so close. Like, all those workouts you hear about that Justin did last summer, Luke May was there, too. And it was those two guys and Chase Bingle, usually the manager. And they just, and that weekend was the weekend a paper down in Florida put out a story about Justin and his now fiance, Brooke. And we kind of said, hey, that was a really cool article about Brooke. And he was like, yeah, that was totally her. He said, because she's, I think, has quit basketball
mm-hmm.
to pursue kind of some of the nonprofit stuff and charity stuff. And he said, yeah, she wants to start a charity and she wants to start it local and then kind of expand out from there. And she's got all these, she's been overseas and to third world places to, and has really been touched by it. And that's what she wants to do. And I'm really excited. And hopefully I'll get to help her with that. Like, this dude's going to the NBA in a month.
He's going to be a kajillionaire in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. And he's worried about, like, my fiance is going to start a charity and hopefully I'll get to go to Africa with her and help the children.
He's worried about coming and standing on stage and waving to people at the Carolina Club to jack up the price of a ball so that this charity is going to get more money. That's really cool.
Yes.
Oh, congratulations, Justin Jackson, on being awesome. All right. Now. There is, as a part of the book, one of the, I think this is part of the book, when in relation to Luke May's shot, right? There's going to be Luke May's shot against Kentucky. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a part of the book that kind of, in a talking about that shot, kind of talks about its place, maybe not ranking it in Carolina history as much as it is, hey, this shot is one that will be discussed in a similar way to these other very important shots. And so you and I were both on this little kind of informal survey about, hey, what are some of the shots that should be included in this discussion, right?
Yep.
What you got?
You just want me to list them?
Well, it's totally up to you. There are really no rules.
So the idea was, kind of, what do you think are the 10 best, most important, most memorable?
And I think that's a big difference because I sent more than 10. And when I did it, I said, now here's a qual. I mean, I think some of these fall much more in the important category.
Right.
And some of these fall in the memorable category. Some of them are both. But, I mean, like Michael Jordan shot against Georgetown. The importance of that shot is much higher than, say, Wayne Ellington against Clemson in 2008. But I think Wayne Ellington's shot is one of the more memorable shots, certainly in recent history, for Carolina. So just that's a qualifier.
I tried to make my list of the shots that no one would argue go on the list.
Hmm.
Like Wayne Ellington, Clemson, you might have somebody who might go, I mean, it was Clemson and it was January.
Right.
But I think these shots, no one can say anything about.
All right.
And the more I think about it, the more I think Luke May's shot might be the single most important shot I've ever seen in person for Carolina basketball.
Oh, I think so. I think it is for me. I mean, I don't – well, we talked about this, I think, afterwards. I mean, to me, other than the Jordan shot against Georgetown, there's only two others that I think can be argued are in that same conversation. And it's Charlie Scott in 1969 against Davidson in the East Regional Final. But Carolina didn't win the national championship that year. Now, that shot did propel them to the Final Four, but they didn't win the championship. And the other that I put on the list were Jill Quigg's free throws in 57 that moved Carolina from down one to up one with seconds remaining in the national title game. They end up getting a defensive stop and win the game. So to me, I almost think you got, in whatever order, Jordan, May, and Quigg. I think those three shots are perhaps the biggest shots, most important shots in Carolina history, because I don't think Carolina wins the national championship without those shots going in.
I agree with that, and I think there's only one more that I would even consider putting on that list, and I'll tell you what it is in a minute. So, Luke May, Michael Jordan, obviously. 05, Marvin Williams against Duke.
In the Smith Center. Yes, yep. No one's going to argue that that one should be on there.
And I think not just because of a win over Duke, but because it felt like that turned the tide.
It turned the tide of the rivalry for a couple of years. Yes.
And it just made you feel like things were going to be okay.
Yeah, and it turned the tide of Carolina. Yes.
Because at that time, sometimes things weren't okay.
Right.
Rick Fox against Oklahoma.
I had that on my list, too.
Number one Oklahoma, number one seed. Carolina beat him in Austin. Awesome bank shot as the clock ran out.
And I think the reason why that one is indisputable, one, it's an NCAA tournament shot, which I think automatically those gain some more importance. And it's one of those rare times where Carolina was an underdog and that it was unexpected for them to do what they did. I mean, most places, that would be like their number one shot of all time, knocking off a number one seed in the NCAA tournament and kind of having a Cinderella type of run. Carolina was an 8 seed, I think, that year. I mean, that for most places would be the biggest thing that's ever happened.
And I think it added to that feeling that Carolina is never down.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
They never have a down year. Even if you get them on the year that they're an 8 seed, they'll probably still beat you.
Yeah.
93 George Lynch dunk against Florida State.
I have that on my list, too.
I think that's our generation's 8 points in 17 seconds.
Yep. Down 20-whatever with about 9 minutes to play or whatever it was.
Pat Kennedy was a Florida State coach. He was flipping through the section on comebacks earlier that day in the media guide. And then saw one of the greatest ones ever in person from the sideline. Plus, Florida State was good.
Oh, they were so good back then.
And had beaten Carolina. And Sam Cassell had made his stupid comment.
Cassell, Ward, Sura, Dobard, Doug Edwards.
Yeah.
Those teams were good.
So here's the only other one that I would consider putting it with that group you said. Walter Davis against Duke in 74.
Oh, yeah. No, I've got that one on mine too. No doubt.
But they didn't win it that year.
No.
But 8 points in 17 seconds is so much a part of Carolina.
Yes. It's one of the most, for big-time Carolina fans, it's one of those things that everybody knows about and understands, and that shot capped it off. No doubt. It belongs on the inarguable list.
8 points in 17 seconds with no 3-point line.
It's crazy. I've got that whole thing. I've got the audio of that whole comeback.
We should do a pod just with cool audio.
Oh, gosh. That could go on forever.
Give the people what they want. 69, Charlie Scott. I think that's the most overlooked one on this list.
I put that on my list.
I think that would be the one that you would most likely say to a fairly hardcore Carolina basketball fan, and you might get back kind of a blank look.
Right.
Like, it's not so ubiquitous that, like, you can picture it in your mind like you can all these other ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, but still, I think it goes on here for a lot of reasons.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Quigg free throws in 57. I think the interesting thing about those are the only ones on this list where the player had the chance to think about what he was doing and consider the consequences.
I mean, Joe Quigg hit 2 free throws, down one with 3 seconds left or whatever it was in the national championship game against Wilt Chamberlain in Kansas.
In Kansas City.
And made them both.
In triple overtime.
Yeah. I mean, those are that's big time.
And Lenny Rosenbluth, who everybody knows, had fouled out.
Had fouled out. That's right.
2 free throws to win the national championship. And then here's one, I don't know, Pete Brennan against Michigan State the night before.
I did not have that on my list, but I think if you talk to anyone from that era and that team, they would quickly mention that one as huge.
Took Carolina from down two to tied and forced overtime. As everybody knows, Carolina played triple overtime back-to-back nights, Final Four and then the national championship. That prompted the overtime. When it looked like Michigan State had won the game and beaten Carolina, that would have been Carolina's first loss. Pete Brennan gets the ball, comes down the court, makes kind of a runner pull-up jumper to tie the game. And I remember one time Lenny Rosenbluth was giving Pete Brennan a hard time and said, like, you know I was open. And Pete Brennan was like, no, you weren't. Nobody was open. And then when you go back and look at the film, like, he was wide open. Not just a little open, but totally open. But Pete Brennan didn't care. He was going down shooting a shot. So that was all I had on my list.
Okay.
Here's the one that I'm real conflicted about. Marcus Page's shot against Villanova.
I honestly didn't even think about that one.
I almost think if Carolina winning it this year made that shot
more palatable might not be the right term, but
More palatable, but kind of less important.
Yeah.
Because, like, at the time, it was like, oh, so close to a title. But now, like, all right, got the title. But, I mean, I've heard people say that Marcus's shot would have gone up there with Jordan in 82.
Coach Williams has said that. He said that he thought it would be, if Carolina had won, that he thought it would have been the most memorable slash important biggest shot in Carolina history.
Okay, so if Carolina had won.
If Carolina had won, yes.
I just can't put it on the list with these other ones.
I don't think you can because they didn't win. I mean, that's...
It was a great shot.
Unbelievable shot.
And for that 60 seconds, it was right there.
Yep.
But I just I couldn't do it. That was my list.
All right. I had five more on my list that you didn't have on your list. And these all fall into the memorable category much more than the important category.
Right.
And most of them are pretty recent because I wanted to think of some recent stuff. Mm-hmm. So I had Ellington against Clemson in 08. Mm-hmm. Again, regular season game, the importance of it. It wasn't even to keep the streak alive in the Smithsonian. I mean, there wasn't much to it other than it's such a vivid memory for, I think, this generation, mm-hmm. if you will, of Carolina fans. Mm-hmm. I had Hansbrough. I put more so just because I thought he should be represented in some way. I had the 08 Virginia Tech ACC tournament, mm-hmm. and or his shot to become the all-time leading scorer. Mm-hmm. Because I do think the all-time leading scorer thing is a big deal. I mean, Phil Ford had owned that title for 30 years, and there's nobody really close to it right now, and nobody I think that is going to get close to it for a long, long time.
No, nobody's getting that.
And so just in that regard, I thought maybe you could make a case for that shot being there. And
was that against Evansville?
Evansville. In like a symbolic kind of way, more than anything. I had the Danny Green dunk on Greg Paulus in Cameron because it is one that Carolina fans enjoy so much, mm-hmm. That they have embraced. And I just, again, not necessarily important, but memorable.
I think that's this generation's Michael Jordan rock the cradle dunk at Kohl Fieldhouse.
Well, I think, and I thought about putting that one on there. I did put Stackhouse's dunk against Duke in 1995 because I think that's the bridge dunk between mm-hmm. the two dunks that you just talked about. Mm-hmm. I think if you asked you and me and said, as a kid, what was the dunk that you remember the most from Carolina? Mm-hmm. And it would be that one.
Yep.
I think if you asked somebody who was 10 years younger than us, then they would say the Danny Green dunk on Paulus. And then the only other one I added was Marcus Page alley-oop to Bryce Johnson against Kentucky in 2014 in the Smith Center, because simply of the volume of the building. That was in that run where Carolina was having this, you know, had beat Michigan State, beat Louisville, but had lost to UAB and had lost to somebody else who wasn't very good, Belmont. And so it was just kind of in that crazy couple of weeks And it was just a really good play. Again, just a memorable play, not necessarily an important play. So to me, those were the other ones that were on my list.
I thought about Marcus Page against State in the T.J. Warren Marcus Page game.
Yep, that was a terrific. That was just two really good players going at it. That was awesome.
I also thought about Ed Cota off the backboard to Vince Carter, but he missed it.
You love that.
I do love that play.
What about Ed Cota against State in '97?
Yeah, at Reynolds.
Yep, 45-44 game.
Yeah. I mean, the nice problem to have
is there's so many.
There's easily 20 more that we haven't even mentioned yet.
No doubt. But I do think, and again, it's not about ranking them.
Right.
But I do think that Luke May's shot is going to go in the upper echelon of that conversation as far as the most important shots in Carolina history.
Just kind of how crazy his life is now. And he is the most normal guy in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And side note, just in case you didn't love the Tar Heels enough already, Luke May, kind of under the radar, makes regular visits to the Children's Hospital with Eric Montross just to go say hello. Like, not to see anyone specific, but just to walk through and just be nice to people.
Not to get a photo opportunity or anything like that. Just to do it.
And he's been doing it all year. Like, he was doing it before he was the Luke May. He was talking about how now he said every time he's gone out to eat, someone has come up to him while he's eating and asked him to take a picture or sign an autograph or something. So, and he, when he threw the first pitch out at Boshimer, Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf were sitting on the row in front of him.
Yeah.
And he said no one talked to them, and he had a line of people to talk to him. Now, this will make you feel old. He was like, I don't really know who they are, but my parents told me they were, like, the best ever in their sport. And I thought it was weird that people wanted to talk to me and were completely ignoring them. So, A, I just think Luke May is funny. B, if you see Luke May out or really any – or Roy Williams, like, because Roy Williams has got some similar stories, maybe not while they're eating.
Right.
Maybe, like, catch them on the way in or catch them on the way out because they don't mind.
No.
But think about, like, if you're sitting there eating with your family and somebody comes up. Coach Williams got a hilarious story about how he was at Applebee's one time with Wicked Wanda, and this lady came up and pushed his plate out of the way so that she could put down her, like, 8x10 glossy picture or whatever.
I bet that went over really well.
You know who didn't like it? Mrs. Williams.
Yeah.
Who apparently set the lady straight.
Yeah.
And Coach Williams was like, hey, you just moved my plate out of the way. I'm eating that food. First of all, you just touched my plate. Second of all, I'm sitting here eating.
Right.
Would you mind just waiting? And then I think Wanda said a few other things, and the lady decided maybe not to wait.
Maybe not at that time.
But just, you know, because you see them on TV, it's like they're not real people. But treat them like you would want them to treat you if you were sitting there eating with your family.
Let me also quickly mention, I think every single event I have done over the last couple of weeks, somebody has come up to me and said something about the podcast. It's been great. So
that's
thank
cool.
you. There are like a couple times where like the husband would come up to me and just for his wife be like, I got to tell you, this right here, this lady, one of your biggest podcast fans. That happened like two or three times. So thank you for listening and always happy to come. Move Adam's plate out of the way anytime you want.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's totally fine.
Yeah, shove that out of the way.
Yeah.
Anything else for you?
Yes.
Oh, baby.
I got a couple things.
Extended pod.
Yeah. Number one, did you see the cookout jerseys?
Yes, I did. I think we should get personalized ones.
Maybe blue.
Yeah, I don't need a red one.
Yeah.
I bet we can make that happen.
Somebody tweeted them to us. I feel like I've been out of touch with the folks on Twitter. Maybe they'll tweet us their favorite shots because I would like to hear. Okay. Since the last time we did a pod, I went on a little Eric Church journey.
Oh.
Former podcast guest.
Yeah.
My wife and I went and saw him first in Pittsburgh and then saw him the next night in Cincinnati.
Mm. You're hitting up the Rust Belt.
Yeah. I kind of think Pittsburgh might be kind of cool.
I like Pittsburgh. I don't think I've ever been to Cincinnati, but I like Pittsburgh.
I liked Pittsburgh. It's not at all what I pictured it as.
No.
And like, obviously, we've been there for basketball games, but I hadn't really ever done anything other than go to a basketball
right.
game. So the Pittsburgh concert, we go in. And as you know, there's no opener for Eric Church. It's just Eric Church. So you go in, and you sit down, And we're sitting there. We're a little bit early, 20 minutes or so. And a guy comes down and sits in front of us. He then proceeds to have a conversation with who I thought was his daughter but turned out to be his girlfriend. That'll tell you where we're headed. He then turns around, like, notices us for the first time. He's like, "Hey, how y'all doing?" We're like, "We're fine."
You're like, "Top of the morning to you, fine, yeah, sir."
He goes, "Do you mind if I cuss?" Now, at this point, he had probably cussed about 10 times already.
Sure.
And we said, "I mean, it's fine. Do whatever you want to do."
Right.
He's like, "I'm going to tell you something. I really like y'all. I just really do."
All you need's a green light to cuss, and you're his boy.
He goes, "I'd like to introduce myself. My name's Buckshot." That was his actual name. Buckshot. This man.
Like Buckshot Smith? Or like, yeah. Buck.
Oh, no.
Shot.
Buckshot was his first name.
Okay.
Buckshot was from West Virginia, which is close to Pittsburgh, I learned.
It's an upset.
Yeah. And Buckshot had a lot of opinions and thoughts. He was on the row in front of us, but it was like he was sitting on my lap. Buckshot was probably about my age.
Right.
But I think it had been like a harder my age than my age. Like, his tree rings were more, I think.
Sure.
Among the things that Buckshot told us, first off, after every song Eric Church played, every song, and he probably played about 40, Buckshot would turn around and he would say, "You don't know how much this means to me. This right here is America." And by like the sixth or seventh song, I wanted to say, "Buckshot, I do know how much it means to you because you have told me every time."
Buckshot's America.
So Eric Church takes an intermission in between the first act and the second act. And that's when Buckshot was really able to share some thoughts, such as, $10.50 for a beer at the Pittsburgh Arena is not fair to the working man.
No, I agree with that now.
Well, it would be more of a viable argument if Buckshot hadn't made it while holding in each hand two cups of Jack Daniels, which he had purchased at the arena, and he then poured into a cup. Now, the Jack Daniels was more expensive than the beer.
Well, Buckshot just wants to make sure the working man can enjoy Eric Church. Buckshot's not worried about himself, Adam.
No. I mean, he should have been. So then Buckshot told me that he wanted to buy a T-shirt.
Yeah, well.
He had started to buy a T-shirt outside. Let's put the earmuffs on for just a second.
Yeah.
Okay? If you're riding with impressionable young ears, let's let them step out of the car. Okay. He had wanted to buy a T-shirt outside, and he saw one that had a marijuana leaf on it.
Oh, boy.
Buckshot was totally offended by this.
Yeah.
Which took me by surprise a little.
Mm.
But he got really worked up. He's like, "I just don't think that's right. They shouldn't be selling those here." He goes, "Because I don't do that." I was like, "All right, Buckshot." He goes, "Now, I was a heroin addict for many years." I had met him like 2 hours before.
I gotta say, I didn't see that one coming.
He goes, "I'm not anymore. Now I go around and talk to kids."
I got to tell you, I kind of want to learn more about Buckshot.
I looked him up on Facebook.
Oh.
Because
I'm not on Facebook.
Well, when things started having an effect on Buckshot, he sat down more in the second act. And
Buckshot got winded.
He was paging through Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I knew he was on there.
Yeah.
And Buckshot then left with about 5 songs left in the concert because...
Another upset. What a complicated gentleman.
His girlfriend had to drive the ambulance the next morning at 6 a.m.
Ooh, EMS.
Wouldn't have guessed that. But I wonder if that's how they met. I think it really might have been. Maybe on a call. But, okay, so that being said, Eric Church was awesome, and he's coming to Greensboro in about a week, and so people should go if they, because I'm telling you, he's going to completely blow it out in Greensboro. I feel like Buckshot would be an awesome pod guest. He also had a lot of thoughts on why he doesn't drink water, which I can't tell you right now.
Right. Seems like that's a poor decision.
For him not to drink water?
Yes.
I think he could probably drink more water.
Yeah.
He doesn't drink water at all, and he told me why within like 5 minutes of meeting him.
Maybe we could get him on.
He'd be awesome.
You're Facebook friends.
No, we're not. I just looked him up.
Well, ask him for a friend.
He'd
friend,
be really good.
Friend there. Request him.
You, this is America right here. Yeah. You don't know how much this pod means to me.
This pod is America. So we'll be back. We're working on getting some good guests. We're lining some guests up. We're doing the legwork to try to make this happen. And who knows? It could be anybody, really. Could be Buckshot. Never know.
That'd be so awesome. I should have gotten his number.
Anything else before we say goodbye, Adam?
I think we've covered it all.
Also, an exciting there's some little things blowing in the wind, Adam, about some potential relationships coming up in the future for the pod, but we'll just let that be for now. We'll let it be.
Just some words of wisdom.
Like dust in the wind, Adam. That's all that is. Come on, Kansas, get to the words.
I close my eyes. Only
all right.
For a moment, and the moment's gone.
We'll see you next time on the Carolina Insider.
My dreams pass before my eyes a curiosity.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.